Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out, it's only films to be battered with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a mic stand, and I love film. As André Breton once said, love is when you meet someone who tells you something new about yourself. Like the fact that you've been lying about having seen Citizen Kane for years just to avoid people explaining the film to you. Mamma mia, look at you, André Breton. Thank you for confessing. Maybe you should come on The Resurrection. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Mark Frost, Sharon Stone, and even Xed Bambles. But this week, it's the brilliant comedian and podcaster and all-round superstar, it's Fern Brady. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes with Fern, where we talk about beginnings and endings. She tells me a secret. You also get the whole episode uncut and you get it ad-free. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So Fern Brady is a fucking brilliant comedian and podcaster. You might also know her from Taskmaster. I've known her for years. I love hanging out with her. She's so funny, so interesting. And this episode is just more of that. We recorded this on Zoom, and I really think you're going to love it. So that is it for now. I hope you're all well, and I very much hope you enjoy episode 230 of Films to be Buried With. Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by an actor, a writer, a podcaster, a sketco, a radio star, a TV star, a human star, a woman, a taskmaster, a hero, a legend, and one of the all-time great stand-ups in the UK. Please welcome to the show, it's the brilliant, the amazing, the wonderful, it's only Fern Brady!
Hello! I'm not an actor, though. I can't believe you described me as an actor.
You've done that. You've done an acting.
No, I haven't. I don't want to do acting. I'm always trying to get... My agent's always trying to make me do it. Yeah. And then I've done some acting in Taskmaster, and that's him back on the... trying to get me into it again. And he's always like, oh, acting's really well paid, as if I don't know. And that's the reason I've been avoiding it.
Yeah. I know you hate money and...
I love money.
Oh, what?
If I was good at acting, I would obviously do it, but it feels psychotic to me.
It is absolutely psychotic. And once you embrace that...
Actually, you said something to me about acting that I think about a lot when we were doing a gig. We were doing a gig in Chatham and Ken.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then it was shit. And you said, "This is acting. We're gonna go and pretend that we like this gig, and that's acting." So I always think of that now whenever I'm about to do acting.
That's so funny because thinking about it, I don't think we did a very good performance of pretending we were enjoying that gig.
And then one of the only things I've acted in was with your mate John.
Yeah, John Drever.
Directed me as an alien boy.
Exactly. I've seen you as an alien boy and it was a seamless performance. It was absolutely magnificent.
So, yeah.
So that's why I opened with your introduction as actor, because that's really how I see you.
No. I'm a comedian. What I want is to avoid acting, and then when I'm about 60, to get a really gritty part in a sort of Ken Loach film. Oh, he'll be dead then. But something like that.
Oh, yeah, and that's the trajectory, isn't it? Yeah, okay.
A sort of Kathy Burke type turn where everyone's like, oh, I didn't know she could do this really bleak role.
You want to do a Dave Johns, right? You want to be...
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Or like Olivia Colman and Tyrannosaur, something like that. I just want to do the most depressing...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's something to aim for. You're in Taskmaster right now. Is that correct?
No, it's over.
Oh, it's finished. What happened in the end? Can we spoil it then? Did you win it?
I didn't win it, but I won the hearts and minds of yours. Yeah, I did. I did well out of it.
Did you love it?
It was like the best job I've ever done.
What was your favourite bit? What was your favourite task?
Singing. I had to do a singing task.
Oh man, I'm excited to see this season.
I sing quite a lot in the house anyway, and I write songs. So it was like the role I'd been preparing for my whole life.
This is so great.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Who won it?
But some people are really precious about spoilers. It's so silly.
Right. But it's out now. It's done.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I think we can say it then. Maybe we'll bleep it. Buddy, why don't you bleep that just because it'll be fun? So what now? You're off on tour?
Well, I've got a book coming out in February.
What's the book? Dear God, that's so insane.
It's just about my terrible life before stand-up.
You got some great stories.
I wanted to do a book about autism and feminism and that, and how I need to get better at describing it. It's a dead good book, though.
Is that the title? It's not a comedian.
Well, no, it's called Strong Female Character, but it's not like a shit comedian book.
Yes.
Do you know where our comedians do books that are really silly?
You need to sell it as this is not a shit comedian book.
No, but it's not. It's because I think people think I've written a silly book, but it's like a serious book. Lure Sanders read it and she was crying.
Put that on it. So it's like your memoirs before stand-up?
Yeah, yeah. We're in one. There's almost no stand-up in it.
That's great.
Because remember I told you years ago, I was writing, I had this stupid script in development for like 5 years about when I was a stripper.
Mm-hmm.
And then the BBC kept returning it to me and saying, this is invulnerable. Can you take out anything decent in it?
Yeah.
So then I just angrily put it all into a book proposal. And then I started writing more stuff around that. Yeah, and then the book happened really quickly.
Oh, this is fucking great, Fern. And then you know what's going to happen is the BBC are going to come crawling back to you and go, oh, can we option this book and turn it into a TV show?
That was basically my plan from the start. Yeah. And I messaged Adam Kay and I was like, I think I would be quicker writing the book and selling the book as a script than continuing on this path. And yeah, that is happening. It's ridiculous. But like I'm having meetings about selling it.
Yeah.
So it was good fun because you just have more control.
How long did it take to write, and was it easy and cathartic, or was it difficult?
It wasn't really cathartic. It was like not depressing. Well, it was at some points, but I really enjoyed it. It took me about between 18 months to 2 years.
Wow, shit.
Most of it got done in a year.
In the writing of it, did you find out anything about yourself, or like, as in, did you kind of learn something from writing it? You were like, oh yeah, now you had a perspective on it that you didn't have before from having written it now.
Yeah, well, yeah. But how do I tell this as a standalone thing? Well, yeah, I realised this. I had this old man that was my friend, but I think he was grooming me.
Oh.
So I guess I realised that. Because you know, I finally got my autism certificate in lockdown, but obviously, I knew I had what they used to call Asperger's. I knew I had that before, but then I got the proper thing for it in lockdown. And then part of that is anyone that's nice to you, you just make them your friend. So when I was 16, my parents kicked me out of the house all the time, and I used to go to the corner shop to practice my Arabic with the old guy that ran it.
Right.
For context, I was going to uni to study Arabic. And he would take me to Pizza Hut and stuff and top up my phone. And I used to think, why are people looking at us weirdly? And I was like, oh, it's because they're racist, not because I'm friends with like a 65-year-old Pakistani man.
Right.
So that was one bit.
How'd that relationship end? When did you stop hanging out?
He took me home. He made me go back to my parents. So maybe he was just, I was telling my dad about it because I was sort of giving my parents a briefing of what was going to be in the book. And my dad said, I think he was just a very kind man.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't think old men just top up your phone and buy you things for no reason.
He might have just felt sorry for you.
Maybe. But he used to say anytime his wife was coming into the shop, he would be like, you have to tell her that you're just my assistant and and we're getting a divorce, so don't worry. And I thought, why? I don't care if you're getting a divorce.
That changes the story completely then. Yeah, I'm screaming you. 100%.
Yeah. And other stories I've told from the book, I've sort of learned not to say on comedy podcasts because people just look fucking horrified. Like I did, do you know Off Menu?
Yeah, I know Off Menu. Huge fan.
Yeah, I did that. And they were like, what can you tell us from the book? And I said, oh, well, I used to work in a strip club in Edinburgh where the only regulars was a guy with a brain injury and a guy that had Down syndrome that would just shout at us all the time. And Ed honestly looked aghast. And then there was just a terrible silence where I was like, oh, I'll just not.
James and Ed are very, very good boys, aren't they? They're very good.
Yeah, I'm a good girl, but I'm just saying what happened.
No, but they're like, they're the equivalent of like virgins, aren't they? I think.
Yeah, yeah.
You're basically talking to two virgins who've never talked about sex. So anything. So even the word strip club probably gives them hives.
I know. I think they thought I was trying to. I don't know. I just felt like, well, I should have adapted that story. But that was what was fun about the book, was I didn't have to sort of. With comedy, you're always trying to get the consent of the audience. That's what Chris Morris says.
That's so interesting.
Well, it then affects what kind of stand-up you do, whereas with a book or a film, you can just put the most fucked stuff into it.
Yeah. Ah, I totally see your Ken Loach plan now. I think it's all going to work out. I think you're going to play really, really depressing parts in your 60s.
Well, I did some acting in Taskmaster and everyone was like, that was so poignant. And I was like, do you know what? I was doing an impression of Sarah Millican.
That's really funny. Fern Brady, yeah. I forgot to tell you something up top.
Oh, man, I love your bespoke cabinets in the background.
Oh, thanks so much. But that wasn't what I forgot to tell you.
Okay.
What I forgot to tell you was, yeah, I got some cabinets in the background, but also you're dead. You've died.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
What did I die of?
Good question. You tell me. How did you die?
100%. I think I'm going to get killed in the street because I'll shout at some mad person that's shouting at me. I'll shout back at them and they'll stab me.
Stab you one time?
Multiple times. It's definitely going to be in Catford where I live. In the Lewisham Council car park is where I'm going to die.
Do you think maybe it's the wife of the man who was grooming you when you were 16?
No, that was in Scotland.
Oh, okay.
I think we're still together.
Oh, that's nice. I'm glad she thought you were his assistant.
Well, I mean, I actually hope for defamation reasons that he's dead.
My question is, if you were his assistant, what were your duties?
We used to just read horoscopes to each other.
So, like, he'd say to the wife, oh, this is my sister, she's just here to read my horoscope to me.
No, he said that I was working in the corner shop.
Right, okay. Anyway, there's a mad, in your words, a mad person in the street in Catford. He shouts at you, he or she?
There's more than one mad person in Catford.
Yeah.
Have you been to Catford?
I have. He shouts at you. You shout back.
I shout back.
He stabs you immediately. How many times?
I don't know. There could be a chase. I've been chased in Catford so many times that I don't even... My facial expression doesn't even change now when I run away.
Okay. So you run a bit and then he stabs you 20 times?
Yeah.
In the back or in the front?
All over.
Some in the head.
Oh, yeah, it's so tragic.
Some in the head, some in the front, some in the back.
You can't put this in. This is terrible. The other way I think I legitimately think I'll die is my aorta thing's going to pop something in me's going to pop.
Right.
And I'll die. Just from being so, I'm full of emotions. And I think the thing in my brain's going to pop, or my heart is going to pop.
Okay, so you either get stabbed multiple times by a mad person in the streets of Catford, or you feel so emotionally moved by something, your heart explodes and your brain explodes.
No, it's not because I feel moved, because I get so angry and wound up that something's going to burst.
Okay, how about this? Mad person in the street shouts at you. You're so furious, you shout back. They run at you with a knife. Before they get you with a knife, you're so angry and you shout at them that your brain explodes before they even stab you.
I'd like that. And then just blood trickles out my nostril.
Yeah, and then they're well confused. Like, I didn't touch them. And then,
yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. That's
my worst death would be for something to fall on my head from the sky. I'm always worried about that.
Yeah, I get that.
That happened to someone in Edinburgh when I lived there.
What happened?
This waitress, I don't know if I should say, but it was about 20 years ago. This waitress was waitressing and she went outside to a table outside, and then a big bit of concrete just fell on her head.
And what happened? She died?
Yeah, that's what, aren't we just...
Yeah, well, it's just that's, I mean, that would, I guess, fill you with dread of things falling out of the sky. I always worry about, is it true? You hear this when you're little. If you drop a pea off the top of the Eiffel Tower and it lands on someone's head, it will kill them. Is that true?
Oh, I've heard that.
Yeah. Seems untrue, but I also would... I think there's only one way of finding out, and that seems...
I think the pea would get blown away.
Yeah. Maybe it has to be a frozen pea.
What? Or it would have to be not a windy day.
Frozen pea on a calm day, you could kill someone.
If it was windy, the pea would just float along like the... feather at the start of Forrest Gump.
Also, the Eiffel Tower's like curved, didn't it? Curved upwards. If you dropped it at the top, it probably just landed in a bit of the Eiffel Tower rather than straight on someone's head. You'd probably have to throw it out a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know who's conducted this experiment that it seems like a fact, but maybe it's true. When I'm in Paris, which has only happened once, I wander around worried about being killed by a pea falling off the Eiffel Tower.
You've only been to Paris once?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I went last year. Well, saying that was only the second time, everyone was smoking. Even children were smoking. It was so stinking. But the Parisians got nicer since last time. They were really nice.
That's nice. Maybe they're fans of Taskmaster.
No, it was before that, I'd been on.
Do you worry about death?
No, I think about my own death every single day, though. And I watch the TV show 6 Feet Under over and over again because it's a good meditation on death. And I love films about death. Like, for someone who's a comedian, everything I watch is extremely dark and bleak.
I respect that. What about, what do you think happens when you die? Anything?
What, to your consciousness?
Yeah.
I think all the near-death things people report where they feel like they're going to heaven could just be their brain comforting them as all their organs shut down. But I do also think we become ghosts.
And stick around haunting people?
I don't know if we stick around haunting. Well, some people do. Well, yeah, they do, because I've seen ghosts.
Can you tell me one ghost story from your life, please?
Well, but it's really true and you're not going to believe me. And you're going to mock
team ghost.
Me.
I'm team ghost.
Okay, well, people always think that ghosts haunt stately homes and stuff, but not council houses in Bathgate, where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And my boyfriend at school... he was saying, oh, my house is really haunted and it's like a real problem. And then his mum was like, she said, the house is so fucking haunted. I can't even get through any of the spooky lines. They all hang up on me. And she was phoning psychic hotlines and they were just refusing to speak to her. And any psychic that did speak to her was like, you have to move out of this house. It's so haunted. So we had a seance one night, me, my boyfriend and two of our mates from school.
Yeah.
And we were just drinking and stuff, and it ended up being quite a laugh. But we'd also brought a camcorder, because this is like 2002 or something. People didn't have camera phones. We put the camcorder on the couch, and then we just forgot about it. And we were all sitting around drinking, eating a tin of Quality Street, right? Then we watched the thing back the next day, and it was all dark when we were sitting around. And you can just see the wrappers of the Quality Street get pushed down on the table and pushed across the table. then my friend was chatting away. She had her back to the camera and you see her just brushing her shoulder absentmindedly. And then from the angle of the camera, you just see her top being pulled the back, right?
Oh my God.
There was other stuff where we would wake up in the middle of the night and like boots would be stamping around the downstairs of the house and no one was downstairs. And then the bit no one believes me about is there was a shot of a door in this video and an old man's face, like this ghostly thing of an old man's face came out the door. But then my friend lent the video to someone that we knew at uni and she never gave it back. So now we never have proof of this happening.
Fucking hell. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Well, so you think ghosts hang around, you don't think they go to heaven, or do you think some go to heaven and some stick around?
No, I don't think ghosts go to heaven. I don't think there's heaven or hell.
You think everyone just sticks around as a spirit?
Yeah.
Interesting. So if you could like lift the veil on your eyes, you'd see ghosts everywhere. You'd see 6 billion ghosts.
Well, I don't think they're all there at any one time. I think they exist. Different ghosts exist to different people. So like my grandparents would be watching me and stuff.
But I wouldn't see your grandparents because they're not.
No, the problem is I'm a Catholic and Catholics believe that your grandparents are watching you have sex.
Yeah.
Well, that was what I was brought up to believe.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. They're into that. Well, I'm just trying to work out the logic, not that it needs some. But so your grandparents are watching you, but I wouldn't. Your grandparents aren't watching me, so I don't see your grandparents.
Yeah.
So I only see my grand. So everyone's family sort of sticks around in their house. So in your house, you've got ghosts and they're all your family. And in my house, I've got ghosts and they're all my family. And everyone stays separate.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, it's only the ghosts that cared about you. So like my granda was a drunk and just this like mad guy. And I didn't have any like very much connection to him. He's not haunting me. He's haunting other people. So
who's
only the grandparents...
Like, the pub.
God, no, like, I don't know. I don't even know who he was bothered about. But my grandparents on my mum's side are around.
So.
And you can tell because they appear in the form of robins and stuff.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Do you know about that?
No, tell me.
You don't know. So when you see a robin, it's one of your dead relatives.
Is it?
Yeah, that's why robins are so cheeky.
Why are they only a sort of Christmas bird?
Well, they're not. They're not for me. They only live for 18 months, so I just found out.
Oh, because they're just a ghost.
Maybe that's why you only see them at Christmas, because the rest of the time they're doing their bucket list or something.
Look, we ain't got long. We've got to quickly haunt Fern before we go. Fascinating.
My boyfriend's family got an espresso machine for his mum at Christmas and a robin flew in just as they were talking about his gran. And he said, oh, granny's here. And then the robin shat all down the Nespresso machine. And then they like knew it was her because that was the kind of... she was quite grumpy.
Because she often shat herself. Well, I got some news for you, Fern. It's sort of true and it's sort of not. The thing is, yeah, you can stick around and haunt people if you want, but if you don't want, there's a heaven. And you go to heaven, you're very welcome there. Everyone's a huge fan. They love your stand-up. They love your book. They've read an advanced copy. They absolutely love it. And it's filled with your favourite thing. What's your favourite thing?
Bread.
Red?
Bread.
Oh, bread. Yeah, it's filled with bread.
And I think of you whenever I'm trying to give up bread.
You just think, oh, Brett must miss this.
Well, no,
so
I referenced you. I went on this fasting retreat, right?
Oh, did you?
Yeah, Lou was taking the piss out of me for it and I went disproportionately mental at her over it. But after, for a few days afterwards, I didn't want to eat bread, which is really mad to me because I'm like an alcoholic when it comes to bread. I love it. Yeah. But whenever I'm thinking, don't you want to be more successful and break America and stuff? I think of that time when we were at Wells Festival. Are you like, this is weird that you have all these treasured memories of me. We went, me and Luke McQueen and Lou got breakfast. Yeah. And then you were like, I don't want any toast with my breakfast. Yeah. And now you're in the Ted Lasso thing.
Yeah, I think that's why. I think it was not eating bread that led to...
Well, that's part of it.
I think it's completely... I think that's all it is. And I would... Anyone who asks...
But it's such an amazing sacrifice.
It is a huge sacrifice.
It's a sacrifice.
I miss bread all the time. But, you know, I really like Ted Lasso. So I guess it's one or the other.
Well, Naomi Campbell says, like, I remember she had a quote about, oh, you know, you can do without having... She basically was saying she has an amazing life, and if that means not having bread at restaurants, she can deal with it. And I think about that and the time you didn't have toast with your breakfast as sensible.
Well, listen, once you're dead... Listen, I agree. Once I'm in heaven, I'm fucking... It's all bread.
You're going to look like Russell Crowe after... Because I think sometimes I go, why can't I just be like Russell Crowe? Because he signed contracts to say he would eat healthily when he was doing Gladiator. Oh, really? Now you see him in Australia and he's just like eating pies at football matches and he's gained about 20 stone and you're like, that's the right way to do it.
He seems so much happier as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure he is. Okay, well, this heaven is filled with bread. It smells like a fresh bakery in there. The seats are like dough. But like freshly cooked dough, and they're not too hot, but they're warm, and everyone there is like a Pillsbury Doughboys walking around, and they all look like that, and you could like poke their belly, and they go hoo hoo ha ha, and they're all so excited. See, there's bread everywhere, bread, and the bread people want to talk to you about your life, but they won't talk to you about your life through film. And the first thing they ask is, "What is the first film you remember seeing, Fern Brady?"
The Little Mermaids.
Excellent film.
Which is actually an autism film, to bring it back to my book. The Little Mermaid. So Hans Christian Andersen that wrote that film was like widely speculated to, since then a lot of people think that he was autistic. And The Little Mermaid's about feeling like you're a freak and you don't fit in with this other world. So you do a deal where you get the thing that you want and you learn to like, pretend you're a normal woman, but you know you're not, and you know you need to be back with the fish in the sea.
That's interesting. What's the thinking behind the decision that he was autistic, Hans Christian Andersen?
Oh, the speculation behind it.
Yeah.
So many things. Like, well, one of the most famous things is when he went to Charles Dickens' house for a visit. I think they'd been writing to each other, and then Charles Dickens had sort of casually said, oh, if you're ever in London, come stay at my house. But then he went to stay, and because autistic people can't read between the lines, he just ended up staying for weeks. And the whole family were just taking the piss out of him behind his back. Then at one point he lay on their lawn just like crying his eyes out because they'd hurt his feelings or something. It's a whole thing. You can look it up.
Where did you see Little Mermaid?
I had it on video and I used to take the video with me everywhere I went and like make people put it on.
I love it.
I just loved it.
I really loved that film. Are you an only child?
No, I've got two younger brothers, so I'm the eldest.
Did you watch it with them?
Well, one of them was a baby. So I would have been like four. Basically, we didn't have a video player, but my grandparents had it. So I used to keep taking it to... the video to their house, and then my granddad was like, I can't watch The Little Mermaid one more time. But it's just such a significant film because she can't, she's trying to impress this guy by suppressing all her natural instincts. And it's like in the fairy tale, because the fairy tale of The Little Mermaid's a lot darker. She's basically in agony with every step that she takes on her legs.
It's a horrible end in the fairy tale, isn't it? What happens at the end?
Yeah, in the end of the non-Disney version, all her sisters float out of the sea and they've all cut their hair off to give it to the sea witch, and they say, take this dagger and stab the prince with it, and when his warm blood goes onto your feet, you'll get your tail back and you can come back and live with us in the sea. So then she's standing over the sleeping prince with his new bride. And she's just like, I can't do it. And then as it turns to midnight or the sun comes up or something, she turns into sea foam. And then she has to live for 1,000 years as like a fucking sea foam spirit or something.
Yeah. I don't know why they changed the ending. It was fine as it was.
There would have been a good song though as she's standing over the prince trying to decide whether or not to stab him.
Yeah, that's true. Kill him. What's the film that scared you the most?
Well, I put two options for this. I said Hereditary, which I think a lot of people will see.
Me too.
Or There's this amazing film called Len and Lucy. Have you heard of it?
No, what's Len and Lucy?
Len, you have to think. In
oh, Lynn, sorry.
Lynn. So Len and Lucy's about, because I'm obsessed with, and loads of my book is about this, the idea of toxic femininity, which is the way women are brought up to socialise, where they're passive aggressive and often you can't really tell if women have fallen out with you because they're just making side eye at each other and making secret little bitchy faces. So this film is about two best friends living in somewhere awful like Kent or something, and one of them gets accused of killing her baby. Her baby dies mysteriously, and then all the women at the hairdressing salon that they work in turn against the friends.
Oh, this is really recent, this film, isn't it? It's like 2 years
Yeah,
ago.
Yeah. Yes, it was one of those films that was just on iPlayer.
Yeah.
And I will watch any film that's about women going through like a dark time, especially if it's a British film, a gritty independent British film.
And why did this one scare you the most?
Because it's so true. So it's basically showing toxic femininity taken to its logical extreme and almost this like witch hunt of this woman. And it's the way that women can be bitches without ever really saying stuff in a direct way. And as someone who's really direct, because I always get told I'm really direct and blunt, but I've not got a lot of social, I'm not socially canny in that way. And if people are saying things without saying them, I can't really read between the lines and work out what's going on in a situation. So that film is more like a horror film than a traditional horror film is to me.
Great, great fucking answer. What's the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier?
Baby Teeth.
Have you seen
Baby Teeth?
I have Baby Teeth. It's an amazing film.
Oh my God. That's another one where it's so exciting when you just find a film. You just run out of things to watch on Netflix and then you just put something on randomly. Mm. And then 2 hours later, you're like, I actually thought I was going to drown in my own tears or have a heart attack while crying at it.
It's such a good film. There's a scene I often think about, and it's quite a big, it's a spoiler. I don't know. Listen, if you've not seen Baby Teeth, press skip forward a minute. But after she's died, the scene in the kitchen and the way that the mum reacts to him is really like, I don't know, three-dimensional, and like it's not quite sort of what you, it's kind of, I just think that whole end part of it, I mean, it's a brilliant film. It's really brilliant and really feels real and complicated, and I love it.
It's a really sexy film as well,
because
like he kind of fucks her to death.
Yeah, it's lovely.
By the end. But one thing I thought might be unrealistic, but I don't really care, is generally when you've got cancer and your body's shutting down, you wouldn't really feel like a ride.
But love is love.
I just thought, because it's just really four actors in it and they're just so amazing. Yeah. And it's so beautifully shot.
There's a great eating a sandwich while having sex scene. Early on. Remember when the mum and dad meet at work to have quick sex and he's also eating a sandwich?
Also, that house that they live in is so amazing.
It's a great house.
I wondered where they found it. But yeah, the first night, so I watched Baby Teeth and my boyfriend was asleep next to me in the bed. Mm-hmm. And by the end, I was like, ugh! And I had to like sit up because I was crying so hard. So the next night I was like, you have to watch this film with me. Just don't ask me anything about it. Just watch it. And then the next night again, we were both just like sobbing.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. you'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's the film you love? People don't like it. It is not critically well received, but you think it's brilliant, regardless of what anyone says.
Well, I was going to say Showgirls, but I think Showgirls has such a big fandom now, and yeah, it's so appreciated. I don't think that's a good enough answer. So I think Cruel Intentions. If I was to say my favourite films,
yeah,
sometimes you try and say, like, Baby Teeth is one of my favourite films, but it's very, like, critically well-regarded.
Yeah.
But if I look inside myself, and if I look at a film I've watched a lot, Cruel Intentions is a fucking amazing film. Someone said, what if we direct a whole film where no matter what's going on, everyone talks like they're horny and about to come? I just love it. Every single person is going to say things in a horny way.
Yeah, it's a fucking great film. And it's you can also have Showgirls, because it hasn't been mentioned enough, if anything, on this podcast.
Has it not?
I mean, it's come up, but you'd think it would be coming up every week. Me
and my best mate Lauren, when we were at uni, we used to live in a flat together in Leith in Edinburgh, and we watched Showgirls every single day. Every night when we came back, we would get a chippy and just have Showgirls on again and again and again. And then we had a Showgirls flatwarming party where our gay male friends were wearing, like, gold hot pants that we'd spray painted gold. And then Lauren made a wall of tits where she cut all the tits out of Zoo magazine and nuts. Because my dad came round after and he was really upset at the wall of tits.
Why?
My family are quite religious.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, no, tits are bad, I suppose, if you're depending on your religion. What is the film that you used to love, but you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh, I don't like this anymore?
Oh, Kids.
Kids. Kids is such a good answer to this question. That is such a good answer.
Yeah.
Please elaborate, but I know exactly what you're talking about, but go on.
So when I was 16 or 17,
mm-hmm,
I remember I had this summer, you used to go to the video shop, and sometimes you could buy discounted videos, and I didn't have the internet or anything at home, so you just had to watch a film again and again. So I remember this summer where the film that me and my pals watched over and over was Kids, and we'd all just started having sex. So it's not a great film or it is a good film to watch, because the plot of Kids is that there's a really slutty girl in it who's been shagged up the arse and everything, and she doesn't get AIDS, and Chloe Sevigny does get AIDS. How do you say her surname? I love her.
You did it. Sevigny. Okay.
So Chloe Sevigny has sex once and she gets AIDS.
Yeah. It's a lesson learned.
Yeah. But the reason I don't like it as an adult, because when I was a teenager, I was like, oh, this film's so cool and it looks so cool, and it's like, if you watch it back as an adult, it's that what's that guy's name? Larry something.
Larry Clark.
Yeah, he's basically a paedophile. He's no better than Terry Richardson, that photographer that took all the sort of pedo-y shots.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing about Kids is half the cast are dead now, which is really sad.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Just tragic suicide and drug overdoses and stuff. Yeah, it's not a very uplifting teen film. And there's also a lot of scenes that I hate gratuitous violence in films so much. I can't watch any Tarantino stuff, and I don't even like if it's on in the background somewhere. But the bit where they batter that guy with a skateboard, it didn't really serve to drive the story forward or anything.
I think in Now I'm Older, a film like Kids is like, I think it exists to sort of scare you and wind you up. It's almost like a modern version of Reefer Madness. You know, that sort of 50s black and white sort of public service film that's sort of famous, where it's like, drugs are bad and they will make you into a killer. Like, kids is sort of like, look at kids, they're terrible and this is the crazy life they live.
Yeah.
And you sort of go, it isn't.
I mean, I guess it did have a good effect, but I mean, I really did have a disproportionate fear of getting AIDS for a long time.
Yeah. Well, it's kept you safe and we thank Lancut for that. That's why you've only had sex multiple times and never just once, because that's how you get AIDS, according to the film.
Yeah.
Do it again, quick. I don't want to get AIDS.
Up the butt.
Quick.
Yeah.
Grab the skateboard. What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but the experience you had around seeing the film will always make it special to you, Fern Brady.
Oh, it's another Chloe Sevigny one.
Yes.
Oh, well, I've put two answers for every film. So, firstly, Human Traffic, because...
Go on, tell me that. I loved that film. Loved it.
I see that's another film I look back on and I find it's very of its time and very annoying.
Yeah, I've not watched it in however long years. I'm sure it...
So, This is in my book as well. When I was still at school, so this is very dodgy. I had a three-way with these people I met off the internet. One of them was a policewoman and the other one was a beef eater. And I was only 17. I think they were borderline paedophiles.
Right.
So this is what I'm on about with the book being blocked. Anyway, I was trying to get away. Yeah.
I mean, we can cut this if you want, but I'm sort of curious, like, you sort of actively looked for that, or they found you? Like,
no, they found me. They found me on a dating site that me and my friends were on for a laugh. That was only one bit I realised was mad. It was only when I was writing the book I thought that was quite mad, and the publisher said it was mad.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I was trying to get away from their house and find a way to get away from their house. And I just didn't want to talk to them anymore.
Yeah.
And I was looking at their DVDs and I said, can I borrow this Human Traffic DVD? Mm. And they were like, maybe you can return it to us when you come back next weekend. And I was like, fuck off, I'm not coming back. Who does this more than once? This is awful. And then a few weeks later, they were like messaging me again, like, where's our Human Traffic DVD? Yeah, and I never gave it back.
Oh, did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched it. It reminds me of that really specific time.
Sure.
Kids a lot around the same time. Kids and Human Traffic. And then the other film was Boys Don't Cry.
Yeah.
And this was for my 16th birthday. I rented a video from the video shop to watch with my friends. But my parents are so strict and so religious that they wouldn't let me watch the film on my own, like without them supervising. So we had to watch Chloe Sevigny get shagged by Hilary Swank wearing a strap-on with my parents and all my friends from school. And it was just excruciating.
That's right. I'm still worrying about your three-way with the policewoman and who was the other character in this disturbing story?
He was a beef eater.
Was this a one-off thing, or did you have... As in, that was a one-off, but did you have other experiences? Did you have good experiences from your dating on the internet? Or is this, I mean, it's so disturbing.
No.
That I'm really sad about.
For context as well, I mean, I was like mental at the time as well.
Right, okay. Okay. Okay, then. Fine. I'm sorry.
I had this three-way. I was talking to my friend Maurice about it the other day. She was she wrote quite a mad book full of sex. And I said, at least the sex in your book's very sexy. And she was like, I'm sure your book is sexy as well. And I was like, I wrote about having kidney stones at a three-way. Like, that's not sexy. Because also at the time, sometimes when I've gone mad, I just want to eat one food over and over. And I'll usually do that until I get ill. And at this time, I was basically just having Diet Coke. Like, there was another time when I only ate eggs until my kidneys gave up. So that's not very sexy, is it?
Well, to some. I'm sure there's a fetish for that somewhere.
Yeah.
Fern Brady, I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Freeway. It's made me sad.
Oh, shit.
I've never been made sad by the idea of a three-way. And here we are.
Oh, yeah. It was so grim.
I guess all sex can be sad in the right context.
Do you want me to say another film that had a mad context that I think about a lot was I watched the film Choke when I had a breakup at uni and I was really sad. So now, have you seen the film Choke?
Yeah, based on the Chuck Palahniuk.
I think if I'd seen Choke outside of any other context, it wouldn't be such a, like, the song Reckoner makes me so sad. And I think it's really such a lovely song because they play it at the end of that film. But traditionally, the way that film ends is something where I kind of go, fuck off. Because the end of the film has him kissing Kelly MacDonald. Sam Rockwell kisses Kelly MacDonald in an airplane toilet. And the voiceover, and I hate voiceovers as a device, the voiceover is like, maybe me and her are just two crazy souls destined to find each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I hate things like that.
Why do you hate voiceovers?
Because if you're a good storyteller, if you can't tell the story visually, maybe go and write a book. Like I was watching a Winona Ryder film last night and every Winona Ryder film has a voiceover to tell the story.
I mean, that's what that's how, maybe you're just a true filmmaker. That is sort of traditionally what you're taught is don't do voiceovers.
I do want to make films.
Do you? Ooh. Well, you've got the eye for it, apparently.
I think it's also treating the audience as stupid, putting a voiceover in.
I don't know how I feel about it because I also go, Goodfellas is one of my all-time favourite films and that's voiceover.
Never seen it.
Wazoo. And then Shawshank Redemption, famously most people's favourite film, voiceover.
Is it?
It works when it
Shawshank
works.
Shawshank Redemption is people's favourite film.
On IMDb, number one film is Shawshank Redemption.
People are so basic. I just don't really like watching films about men and their stories.
That's fair. What's the film that you most relate to?
Fish Tank.
That's such a good answer, my God.
Fish Tank's my all-time favourite film. I think it's a perfect film. I think Andrea Arnold is totally underappreciated. I don't really understand why she hasn't won an Oscar. She even made a film about a cow, a dairy cow.
Oh, the cow. Yeah.
Like it shows the cow meeting its boyfriend and the cow has sex with the bull and then like Rihanna's We Found Love in a Hopeless Place or something plays in the background. It's so good. So by the end, when the cow dies, which isn't really a spoiler, because what do you think happens to dairy cows? Me and my boyfriend watched it and we were like crying, like we have to give up meat and we have to give up dairy.
Yeah, I think that was the end of that film. Have you given up meat and dairy?
I don't eat meat, but the dairy thing I'm working on. Yes. But about Fish Tank.
Yeah.
The reason why I think it's so amazing is it's all about being a creative. When you're a working class girl and you want to be creative, she goes to this dance audition and she wants to be an R&B dancer, but then all the other girls are just doing sexy sort of strippery dancing. And it's about that realization that if you stay in that place, there'll only ever be one way for you to be a woman. And she's trying to find a different way of doing that, and that's why she has to leave.
Excellent. I get it. Fern Brady, what's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Well, I think I said Fish Tank. Believe me.
Well, the story adds up. Go on.
I love when Fish Tank, where Michael Fassbender's like, do you like my big cock inside you? Or whatever. Because I'm just like, that lassie wasn't even an actress before this, and now she's getting to like pretend to shag Michael Fassbender. And he's Irish. Like, I pretty much only go out with Irish guys.
Oh, do you?
I love it. It's so hot.
Okay, Fish Tank. Troubling bone.
Or Itu Mama. I love Itu Mama Tambien.
That would be the best answer.
Because if I got cancer, I'd also go to Mexico and have a freeway.
Yeah, with those two fit guys.
But I've never rewatched it.
Oh, she's wonderful. What a film.
But I've never rewatched it. I've only watched it like once or twice 15 years ago.
What, whereas Fish Tank's on repeat, is it?
I've watched Fish Tank probably 20 times. And I forced Alison, do you know Alison Spittle? She's an Irish comedian. Basically, like, forced her to watch it. I had a campaign to get her to watch it. Because she'd cried at Wasp, which is Andrea Arnold's short film. So I was like, "Why? What have you got against watching Fish Tank?"
Did she love it?
She didn't love it as much as me.
Right. The subcategory is troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. Film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should. Now, I mean, we're all excited for this one.
This is the truth, right? And I'm not saying it to be provocative. In Schindler's List.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't my fault that this made me aroused. That is Steven Spielberg's fault. There's a bit where this, I think her name is Helena Hirsch. She's like shivering in the basement she lives in. Mm. And her nipples are poking out. And then Ralph Fiennes comes down and he's like, "Are these the eyes of a rat?" And he's like, fancies her.
Yeah.
So I saw this when I was like 10 or 11. And he's like, "Is this the face of a rat?" And he's basically saying, "I really fancy you, even though I hate you." And this is when I was younger, I went out with some bad guys. So I obviously loved to go out with a guy that hated me.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's all horny from looking at her. And then he pushes a shelf on her. He like pushes a bookshelf on her. And I used to just think, "Oh, I'd love to have a bookshelf pushed on me. That'd be so hot."
Fern Brady. You have fulfilled the criteria of that question so fully, and I salute you.
Well, there's a similar one, just so you don't think, "Oh, she just deliberately picked Schindler's List to provoke me." A really similar one, Batman Returns. Michelle Pfeiffer's not yet Catwoman. This is how she becomes Catwoman. She's a shy secretary. And then Christopher Walken's her cunty boss. And I just think he's so attractive. And he like leans in close to her and he's having a go at her. And then she's like, "Ah." And then he leans back and shoves her out the window. And I just thought that was really arousing.
Yeah.
I just want to be shoved out a window and murdered or have a bookshelf pushed on me.
That I get. I do get the Batman Returns one. That is any moment in that film with Michelle Pfeiffer is sexy. And it is sexy, that scene. Because there's tension, because she knows she's caught and he's Christopher Walken. I mean, it's a great fucking scene.
Well, the other thing is both these films, I saw them before I really understood the context of either film. So in Batman Returns, I didn't understand that she'd like stolen documents for his evil nuclear power plant. And then in Schindler's List, I didn't understand, because I rewatched the scene before doing this podcast because I really wanted to make sure I didn't say a wrong thing. I really didn't understand the context of Schindler's List as a child and the context of that whole scene. But I do think Steven Spielberg didn't need to have that scene.
Interesting.
But I fancied Ralph Fiennes so much. I love a man with cold eyes who has no interest in me.
I get that with women. Cold, dead-eyed woman who hates you. Oh, delicious. What is objectively the greatest film of all time?
Everything Everywhere All at Once, I think.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah.
I went to see that at the cinema, and sometimes you go and see a film at the cinema where you're like, "I'm so glad that I saw this at the cinema rather than in the house."
Yeah.
I basically was crying from very early on, like very, very early on in the film.
Yeah.
And my boyfriend was like, "Why are you crying?" And I said, "Just at the power of cinema." I was like, I just love films so much. And I felt so happy that they'd made that film.
Yeah.
And I cried. I laughed a lot at it. And I was sort of like cheering and stuff. But I cried at that film about five different points in the film. Yeah. It was ridiculous. It's such a good film.
It's amazing. I cried the last half hour of that film. I cried solidly. I think it's really incredible. That it's so beautiful.
It's so lovely watching the interviews with the actors, because they both of them sort of felt like there weren't roles for them, whether it's because they're Asian or with Michelle Yeoh, I think because of her age, she just felt like she'd aged out of cinema. But I love it. I love it so much.
You're right. That's a fantastic answer, and you're right. What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
I'm trying to think of one isn't Fish Tank.
Right.
Oh my God. My Summer of Love.
Oh, great.
You ever seen that?
With Emily Blunt?
Yeah, that's a hot film as well.
Yeah.
You see Emily Blunt's boobs. I really fancy Paddy Considine. So there's like a hot non-sex scene between them where they nearly kiss. I think they do kiss a bit. And it's mad because My Summer of Love, I think, was a novel about lesbians in like the Yorkshire countryside. But then the director's this Polish guy that just really fancied making it. But it's such a beautifully shot film, and it's like the mood of it is so good. And Emily Blunt's character is such a bitch. The lead actress is amazing. Paddy Considine's amazing, even though he's not even in it for that long.
Yeah, he's great. Okay, I don't like to be too negative, fan, so let's do this quick. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
Notting Hill. How about that?
Notting Hill. That's an interesting answer for why.
I really enjoyed Notting Hill when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
I went to see it at the cinema. I rewatched it several times. But I believe that Notting Hill and then the whole Richard Curtis universe tricked me into moving to London, a place which is nothing like Notting Hill. I've lived in London for, it's going to be 10 years next year. I promised myself I'd do 10 years, see if I could get famous in comedy, and then I could finally go home. Well, or I'd move to Glasgow where everyone thinks I'm from.
Yeah.
Growing up, I think that there needs to be more films about how London really is, because watching Notting Hill, where it's like, my name's Will and I work in a little bookshop, it was so misleading to the horror of South London. Every day that I live in London, I think I'm going to die. And every day there's just fresh human misery. And I have a nice life in London. I do the job I love. I bought a house here and all that. And it's still a horrific place.
Do you still plan to leave at the end of 10 years?
Realistically, I won't. But I have started up a campaign to get my boyfriend to agree to move to Scotland.
You're in comedy. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
Oh, A Star Is Born. Oh, my God.
Why?
So I first watched A Star Is Born. I really love watching films on planes because I'm usually on Xanax or something like that. And I'll always either cry excessively or laugh excessively. And I watched A Star Is Born on the way back from Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And they got, if you haven't, have you seen A Star Is Born?
I have seen A Star Is Born. So
how do I say this in a way that won't get cancelled?
I don't know.
I have alcoholics in my family, so I wouldn't be the most sympathetic person towards the idea of alcoholism as a disease or whatever, but I understand why that's a flawed view. Anyway, the plot of A Star Is Born is she's going out with this alky, and then they go to the Oscars and he's been on one from like 7 p.m. and then Lady Gaga, or maybe it's the Grammys, Lady Gaga gets an award for her album, and then she's like, oh, baby, can you come up on stage? And she gets, what's his name, Bradley Cooper, up on stage. And he's like, oh, fucking. And then he just starts to piss himself on stage. And she's like, oh, baby, no. Oh, no. And she starts to use her dress to cover up the piss.
Oh, dear.
I was screaming laughing. And I remember the person sat next to me just looked really disturbed by my reaction. And then my best friend, Lauren, I said to her, you have to watch the film A Star Is Born. So we find a lot of the same stuff funny. Like, we both thought Showgirls was funny. And I said, you're in A Star Is Born, this is what happens. And then I was fortunate enough to be with her when she first watched that bit. And she would go, it's exactly how you said. This is exactly what happens. And we just were howling, laughing.
Yeah.
Same with my boyfriend. We have the same sense of humor. He also found it very, very funny. But then, interestingly, my best mate said to me, she said, listen, Fern, those lassies we went to school with, they think this is the most poignant thing ever. And I went, no, they don't. And she said, they do. Basic bitches, if you think about it, quite basic lassies who their husband or their boyfriend just gets pissed every Saturday night and makes a fool of them. For them, this is dead poignant. And then sure enough, someone that I worked with who was really basic and annoying, that doesn't identify them and it's not a British person, so you won't know who it is. I was like stalking her Instagram to like go, and then I saw that she'd posted, A Star Is Born is such a wonderful film about addiction. It's, oh God, I love it. And I watch, I sometimes just get that scene up on YouTube to watch it.
You're an absolute monster.
I'm not a monster. Knowing that there's people going, oh, this is so poignant, makes me laugh even more.
Fern Brady, you have been an extraordinary joy. Thank you so
you too.
Much. You've been wonderful. However, when you were out in Catford and a mad person shouted at you in the street and you were so angry, you shouted back and you got so mad, they ran towards you with a knife. They were about to stab you 20 times in the back, front and head. But before the knife could make contact, your emotions became so engorged that your brain exploded.
And your
eyeballs, the mad guy ran towards you with a knife, he just saw your eyeballs just pop out.
Uh-oh.
And they popped out from your brain, exploded, and you fell to the ground and they went, oh, shit. And then they ran away. And I was walking through Catford with a coffin, you know how I am. And I'm like, oh, well, fans around here. I'll go and say hello. Maybe we can not eat toast together. And then I see this gathered around the street and I'm like, oh, fucking hell, what's that? And I see you, eyeless, brains leaking out of your eye sockets, dead.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, shit, sorry, guys. I'll probably need to pick this up. But so I've got this coffin, but it's not quite the right size. So I'm having to get, I go to the mag, I go, can I have that knife? And we start chopping you up into bits, trying to make you smaller. Anyway, we stuff you in this coffin, stuff you in, all bits of you and all your brains. I'm trying to scoop up brains from the
cement
and everything. And then there's a pea embedded in your skull. And it turns out, fuck, someone had chucked a pea at your head as well.
No, they didn't. Let it go. That's not a thing.
I did, I'm afraid. I've stuffed you in. Anyway, the coffin is full. It is jammed. And there is only enough room in that coffin to slip one DVD into the side with you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, movie night every night. What film are you going to show the bread people of heaven in Bread Heaven in the Bread Cinema when it is your movie night? Fern Brady, go.
Fish Tank.
It is, surprisingly, Fish Tank. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Fern Brady. Is there anything you would like to tell people to watch, to look out for, or to read, perhaps?
Please read my book, also available on audiobook and Kindle. And it comes out February the 16th. The book's
brilliant.
Called Strong Female Character, but I didn't call it that. So it would be... No, I didn't call it that. Like, oh, it's about empowering women. I just called it that as a piss take, but now people think I've called it that seriously.
And people think you meant it. Fern Brady, you're a strong female character at the SPM. Wonderful talking with you. Thank you very much for doing this and have a wonderful death.
Thank you.
So that was episode 230. Head over to Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Fern. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. My neighbour Maureen likes reading them, and you wouldn't want to make her angry, would you? Would you? Thank you so much to everyone who listens. Thanks to Fern for giving me her time. Go see her on tour. You won't regret it. Also, listen to her podcast. I mean, just look her up. Go and see everything she's doing, because she's brilliant. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydham for the photography. Hope you're all well. Have I said that? Well, I mean it twice. Come join me next week for another smasher of a guest. But that is it for now. In the meantime, everyone, have a lovely week. And please, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.